My name is Jose Ruiz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Fourth Dimension Group. And we meet on Friday nights at the Presbyterian Church in Newport Richey, Florida. That light is bothering me. I have a sobriety date, which is October 29th of 1995. I have a sponsor. His name is Bobby Broussard, and he lives in Lafayette, Louisiana. Because if I tell you where he lives, you don't know. You won't know where it is. He's in the boonies out there. His sobriety date is May 17th of 1974. And I want to thank Will for asking me to come down here and speak. I was in Texas last week, and I got a text message, 1001 North Florida. And when I GPSed it, it was sending me to Ohio. And I said, no, I don't think that's where I'm going. And I put Tampa, Florida, and it took me here. So, I'm just going to tell you what it was like. I'm the oldest of three boys. I was born in the Caribbean, in a little island called Puerto Rico. And I was raised in the Garden State of New Jersey. My parents landed in Jersey in 1970. We landed in Hoboken, New Jersey, and a couple years later, the house that my dad had burnt, and we ended up the hill in Union City, New Jersey, and that's where I was raised. That's where I did all my elementary school. Y'all do it different down here in Florida. Y'all have middle schools and shit like that. I don't know what that is. I went from K to 8 elementary, and then I went to high school, and as a young man, I was accepted at a parochial school in Union City, New Jersey. It was called St. Augustine's Catholic School, and I went there for pre-K all the way to like third grade before I got kicked out. And what happened in that parochial school, I was sexually abused by a Catholic priest. And I say this because it's a major part of my story. I was 10 years old when that happened, and I stole all their wine. I drank it all. I got kicked out. They kicked me out because I drank. Number one, I stole their wine because I knew where the wine was. And I drank a lot. And I couldn't cope. They told my parents that they needed to take me to a psychologist, and my mom and dad did, all I did was lie to the psychologist. And for many, many years, you know, many years I drank, and I started drinking heavily. After I got kicked out of that parochial school, I went to a public school, and I got kicked out of my eighth grade graduation because of my drinking. So alcoholism was powerful early on in my life. At the age of 16, I dropped out of high school. I just couldn't cope. I couldn't deal. I couldn't hold a sober breath. So I would go to school drunk all the time. Alcohol was very, very easy for me to get. It was in my household. I stole it from my dad, you know. And I would fill the bottles back up with water. My dad knew that I was drinking. And my dad got to the point where he couldn't deal with me anymore. And my uncle, his brother, came and scooped me up and took me with him. And I ended up in Brooklyn, New York. And I ended up working with him. He owned a plumbing and heating company. And I'll tell you, you know, in 1986, $27.35 an hour was a lot of money. And I was just a helper, and he got me into school. And I went to school, and I became a journeyman plumber. And I did a lot of drinking. I never stopped drinking. I get a kick out of when people say, I took a drink and I didn't know what I was going to do next. I knew exactly what I was going to do. I was going to keep drinking. There was no, why come to Alcoholics Anonymous if you're not finished? I mean, I drank, man. I love drinking. I love everything about drinking, the way it made me feel, everything, you know. And in 1991, I ended up in Florida. We came down for a spring break, me and a couple of my friends. There used to be a bus. It was called La Cubana. It was a bus that would go from New Jersey to D.C., from D.C. to North Carolina into South Florida. And it was only $49.95. No A.C. in the bus, but we were allowed to drink. You couldn't do that in the Greyhound. So we decided not to take the damn Greyhound. We wanted to drink. And we ended up in Hollywood, Florida. It was spring break, 1991. My friends went back home and I stayed. It was April. It was freezing in New York and in New Jersey. We all came with leather jackets. And then when we got to Hollywood, Florida, it was hot. And it was jamming. A lot of partying going on down there. We stayed for 2 weeks. I don't remember much because I was always drunk on the beach. But my friends went back home and I stayed, and I ended up getting a job with the local plumbers union in Fort Lauderdale, 727. And then from there I went to 519 in Miami Lakes, and I got hired by this company, one of the biggest plumbing companies back then, in Miami, and I worked with them for a couple years. And I remember we were, 1992, I was out in the Turkey Point in the base, and Hurricane Andrew was coming. And they rang those bells, and we had to get back on the boat. You couldn't miss the boat, or else you were stuck. And by the time I got inland, we weren't allowed to get on the turnpike, so we ended up in this little town called Ghouls and Prines, and I ended up in a bar there. It was the coolest thing, you know what I mean? The bartender said, or the owner, they said, open bar for everybody, just hunker down, we're going to go through the storm, and we did, and we were all drunk. And I made it through that, and I was running this job at the University of Miami on Red Road and 57th in US 1. We were doing a mall down there, and the general contractor on that job was very inconsiderate of my behavior. I would show up to work every day on time and on the dime, but I was drunk, and they didn't approve of that. I used to go to the 7-Eleven. They had these big Slurpee cups. I mean, huge cups. I made sure that my guys had water, but my cup was full of booze. And I drank, man. From morning to night, it was nonstop. And my boss came to the job and begged me. You know, he said, hey, man, we need you here. From 7 to 3:30, can you just not drink? I said, I'll try. I never committed. Because I couldn't. You know, and I ended up getting fired. And then when they fired me, I was living in an apartment in Miami Lakes. And, you know, you got to pay your rent. You know what I'm saying? You got to pay your light bill. They took care of the water because it was a condo. But I couldn't even do that, you know. There was a red tag on my door. I had gotten evicted. And the only thing I had to my name at that time was a 1983 Toyota Tercel. and our garbage bags were my personal belongings. So I threw the garbage bag in the back of my car, and I ended up at the Don Shula Hotel in the parking lot, and that's where I was sleeping. And one morning, tow truck driver comes over to my window and starts knocking on my window and tells me, you need to get out of the car. And I said, this is my car. He says, no, it's not. It's getting repoed. You haven't made a payment in 3 months. Oh, you got to do that too? So I ended up homeless, and I ended up living in this park, a famous park in Miami, downtown, called Bicentennial Park. I was living large in oceanfront property. And a coastal was right there. And I ended up in a cardboard box. And I lived that way for 3 years. And, you know, I had a formula, right? Because, you know, alcoholics are very smart people, right? Very keen. My formula was all I needed to do was hustle enough to get a Marlboro Red box, an OE 40 ounce, and then to taper off the evening, maybe Cisco or MD 4040, Night Train, if I couldn't, you know. So it was not that hard for me to go out and hustle just to come up with 20, 25 bucks. And I would do it every night. And every night I would be in my box in heaven. And, you know, and I thought that, you know, that was a way of life. There used to be a homeless shelter across the street called the Camilla's House, and I would go there they allowed us to go there Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to take showers. They would give you a care package. You know, they would feed you, give you some food. And there was this guy, a priest, and there was a lady there by the name of Claire Madame, and I can say her name because we became really, really good friends. And there was a priest there called Father Harry, and I hated that guy. He would always invite me, you know. They'd talk to me about this thing called the Change Group, and it was like a treatment center, like some kind of a sober living, whatever they call that. And that guy used to pester me. Every time I would go there, he would, you know, he would have this white collar, and I would look at him, and I wanted to punch him in the face a couple times because of what happened to me when I was a kid. And my mind would go there. And I looked at him dead seriously and said, there's nothing that needs to be changed about me. I just need to take a shower and go back to the park and in my box, and I need to drink. And I did that, you know, but for years, right? And in 1995, something happened. Alcohol stopped working for me. And I remember that guy, that priest. He would say, if you ever need a bed, we have one here. Don't be afraid to come and ring the doorbell. We're here to help. And I did. Woke up one morning and alcohol stopped working. Now, just to clarify, if you're new and you're here tonight, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really want to welcome you here. I'm glad that you're here. I hope that you hear something here tonight that will bring you back to another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what happened to me in 1995. Okay, I picked up one white chip, and that's all I've ever picked up since I've been here. See, I don't know what it is to go back out and drink, and I know what it is to struggle and do the step work that is required to be able to get over the hump. In 1995, I went and I rang that doorbell. And that guy came down the steps. It was like a spiral steps, and he came down. And I asked him, I said, is the bed still available? And he said, no, there's no more beds available. He said, but I know where you can go. He gave me this address and a piece of paper, and he gave me back then, you know, there was no, like, everybody has cell phones today. Back then, cell phones were very expensive. We had pay phones. And he gave me two tokens for me to take the bus from downtown Miami to 79th Street, and he gave me an address. It was 755 Northeast 79th Street. And that was an AA club room called the Little River Club. So I proceeded to go to the store, to the bodega on 14th Street. And there was a guy in there, you know, those Indian guys with the dot heads, you know what I mean? And I went into the back of the store, and he looked at me, and he was like, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I'm going to go get a beer. I grabbed the beer, and I put the two tokens on top of the counter, and I said, this is all I have to pay for this. And I walked out the door. And I started walking on Biscayne Boulevard, and I ended up at the Little River Club, drunk. See, I didn't come to AA like this. I was not a vision for you, yo. You know what I'm saying? I had a construction bag with my personal belongings. I walked into Little River. I was tore up from the floor up. I was drunk, and there were two guys in there. And I'll never forget, you know, there was a guy in there by the name of Airplane Frank. He was at the door. He was a small little guy, and he had a device that he would put to his throat, and he would talk. My name is Frank, and I'm an alcoholic. Like, whoa. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Whoa. Freaked me out. Then he had a little hole right here and shit, and I was like, whoa, what the? Is this AA? You're in the right place. So he sat me down. I was terrified that by then. And they brought me a cup of coffee. Back then, there was no styrofoam. Like, y'all got some big styrofoam cups here. They gave us porcelain cups. And my first cup of coffee in AA, I'll never forget that. I spilled half of it on me. You know, I lift the cup and I was, and when I went to drink it, I spilled half of it and they took the cup away. And then they brought the cup back full again, and then they took a straw and they cut it and they put it in there and they said, don't lift the cup up, just sip it. I never want to forget that. You know, and my first meeting was October 26, 1995. There was a guy in South Florida, they do things different, right? They have a lot of step meetings, step series. There was a guy by the name of Ray O'Keefe. He was coming to do the steps. And he was on step one. And I sat there, and I can tell you, I don't remember anything that guy said. But I was there. And after the meeting, he came down, you know, and shook my hand, and he said, it's good to see a young man like you in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to AA. And that guy became my sponsor for the first 12 years of my sobriety. And saved my life. He was a pain in my rear end. He made me do a lot of uncomfortable things, like work the steps. You know, and I have so many stories, but what I want to tell the newcomer here is that sponsorship is the key to success in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to tell you what that guy told me. He said, I was already about a year. He started sponsoring me And I picked up a year chip, and then after that, first of all, when I was new, I wasn't allowed to talk in the meetings. I just want to make myself clear. I had commitments. I was cleaning the bathrooms. I was doing coffee. I was at the door greeting people. That was terrifying. And cleaning ashtrays, because they were smoking meetings back then. And after my year of sobriety, he said to me, my wife is going to New York, to Mamaroneck. You're coming to my house. I'm going to take you through the book. And he said, pack light because you're not moving in. So I went through my first 9 steps in a weekend, in 3 days. And it's doable. I had nothing better going on. I was living in a sober living house, and I was working odd jobs because I was unworkable as well. But I can tell you my experience with what happened is that by Sunday of that weekend, I had a list, and I was ready to start making amends. And I was only 26 years old when this took place. So I share that because Alcoholics Anonymous works. If you don't work it, shame on you. Yeah, I'll do this, but that's not AA. You know, I did an inventory with Ray, and it changed my whole life. First, he said to me, if you don't let me in, son, I can't help you. So I did. I let him in because I trusted him. And I did an inventory, and that inventory was the beginning of, it opened up the door to the key of the kingdom for me. When I did the 5th step, in my opinion, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that is the powerhouse step. Because what happened to me was I drew nearer to my Creator. When I came to AA, I didn't believe in God. And it was because I was ignorant. Because I thought God punished me when that priest did what he did to me. That was not God. That was a human being that did that. So my whole perspective changed when I had to pick a power greater than myself. And I'll tell you, look, a year ago, a lot of good things have happened to me in my sobriety. But I'm talking about what happened about a year ago to me, because this is near and dear. A year ago, I got diagnosed with cancer, and right after Super Bowl Sunday. And I went through 84 treatments of radiation, and it was painful. And AA was at my house. I had sponsees at my house. I mean, it was incredible. And on Wednesday, I was at my doctor, and I did a PET scan, and now I go in March for results. And in the meantime, when I was going through all these treatments, I couldn't work. I would come home, and I was like, pfft. So my son, one of my kids works with me. He was doing all the work. And I can tell you that, I got on my knees, and I'm not a guy to be getting on his knees. I got on my knees, and I asked God, you know, if there's anything that I've done right by you, please help me get through this so I can be able to be there for my grandkids. I have some grandkids. And my kids were worried deaf, you know, and today I'm cancer-free. You know? I have I have three beautiful kids. I got one that's a knucklehead, that's a career criminal. He's in and out of prisons all the time. Then I got one that is straight shooter. He's in the military. And then the other one works with me. I was just in Texas last week. My daughter-in-law is going to have a baby, another baby, a baby girl. Oh, my God. And my son, I was just on the phone with him on my way here. And I share this with you guys because when I came in, I was a horrible father. Horrible dad. Not drinking, in sobriety. Don't get it twisted. All this stuff I'm talking about is in sobriety. Horrible dad. And I was able to make amends to my kids. And today, they're like, the relationships that I have with these kids is like amazing. I went to Texas for my daughter-in-law's baby shower. My son said, Dad, you need to come for AJ's birthday. That's my grandson's birthday. I said, okay. So I get back home. I said, I'll buy the plane ticket when I get back home. As soon as I got home, I had a plane ticket in my email. My son bought me the plane ticket. I said, you didn't have to do that. He says, I do that because I love you, Dad. And I have a grandson that when I was there, he said, you're not going home, Papa. You got to stay here with me. That's what AA has done for me. And then I got another grandson in Ocala. My little Red. I call him Red because he has all like a strawberry color hair. He calls me. I don't know how this works. These kids were 2 years old, three. They got smartphones. They got tablets. When I was 2 years old, there was none of that around. And they know. And the funny thing about it, they know how to operate it. They press buttons, and I'm like, he's oh hi Papa. I'm like, oh whoa. It's amazing, you know. I have a wonderful life today, you know. I wouldn't trade anything that I've gone through in sobriety, you know, because I continue to learn, I continue to grow. One of the things that I am most grateful for is that when I was sick with cancer, my sponsor had me do inventory, and that got me through it. So that fourth step is huge. But then we have a 10th step that says continue to watch for fear, blah, 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 blah. I admire people that can get up on the podium and quote the big book. I have to have it right in front of me because I don't want to screw the words up. But, you know, if you're new and you're here and you're struggling, please get with somebody after the meeting. You don't have to leave here, you know, with any kind of crazy thoughts, because, you know, we all have them. You know, please get with somebody. You know, and if nobody told you today that they love you, I love you, and thank you for my sobriety.